One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Possibly the greatest ever player to grace the pitch is this week starting his journey, at least physically, in Miami, at Inter Miami in MLS, to discuss the intriguing, Jamie Slevin joins me.
Lawrence McKenna, how are you?
Good, thanks. It's a weird one. Like, originally I wasn't all that interested by the Messi deal. I sort of felt there weren't many interesting aspects to it. But the more that I looked into it, the more that I heard about it, the more that I actually heard some other people break it down, the more I was interested in this.
Lionel Messi will be playing his football in the US next season, and his new club, Inter Miami, gave their superstar signing a spectacular welcome overnight.
Yeah, it was a pretty big one. It's fair to say it was a glitzy spectacle as the seven-time Ballon d'Or winner was formally introduced as an Inter Miami player.
Yeah, the ceremony was delayed after stormy conditions, but that didn't stop thousands of fans from gathering to witness the presentation.
We are recipients of a legacy of the greatest player in the world that started at Newell's Old Boys.
What is it? Newell's Old Boys.
Barcelona. Ended at PSG. But today, it sits in the hands of Inter Miami and its fans.
Fascinating stuff over there in MLS. Sorry, that was actually my phone. Fascinating stuff over there in MLS, right? And it's not the MLS, because that would mean it was called the Major League Soccer. Loads of people this week saying the MLS in the same way you call it the Major League Baseball. You just don't do that. But fascinating stuff over there as Messi is unveiled. Bit of a weird unveiling. Did you watch any of the unveiling?
Yeah, I did catch it. It wasn't exactly what you'd expect for Lionel Messi.
Yeah, I guess for Messi, like the scale of his career, the scale of everything that's happened, you know, from the very beginning, the furore around him, Barcelona sheer scale at the time when he came through, the marketing capacity, the fact that he's always been at least a big part of the face of Adidas football. I don't always think he's been the central face, but I guess in America he would have been, but not necessarily always in Europe. And then obviously also just the sheer scale of things around PSG and everything with that. That PSG deal felt big. So he's used to dealing with things at scale. I guess the MLS deal feels a little bit different. And I'm not saying the MLS, I'm saying the MLS deal. So it's slightly different. But I guess there's a lot to break down here. Not even I guess, I know there's a lot to break down, because what strikes me about it is this is much closer to almost a multimedia deal, which football is part of it, than a football deal where the multimedia is almost tacked on, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's remarkable. It to some degree shows that just a wage, just a salary, no matter how big, wouldn't have been able to have enough economic or personal appeal,
yeah,
to bring someone like Messi to the MLS. You know, Beckham went over there famously in 2007, and he, to go full circle, had the option to buy a football club,
yeah,
at a fraction of the price.
One of the expansion sides, as they call them, yeah.
Right, who has now, into Miami, who have now welcomed Lionel Messi. Apple have been involved. Mm-hmm. Adidas have been involved. Mm-hmm. Lionel Messi has an option.
Fanatics as well, by the way, sorry. Fanatics being one of the biggest fan like garments, should we use garment makers, so they basically make all the things where it's not the official club merch, but it is official club merch, but it's not the official club merch. So it's that stuff where it says, like, you know, Phillies across the front of their jersey if they are from the Philadelphia 76ers, those kind of things.
Yeah, right. And it basically is an acknowledgement in some ways of the stage of career Messi's at, which is where he's not interested in just another salary and signing on fee, but he's a little bit more interested in legacy, economic brand, etc.
And I guess also like there's other things that have played a bit of a part in this, right? So Lionel Messi has, and I guess that the very top end of the game, you're always going to have access to the very top end of the money. You're always going to have access to, because you're such a valuable asset to whoever you join forces with, you're always going to have multiple people offering you big deals. Barcelona wanted him back because he would have been the face of the new era of Barcelona, right? PSG wanted him because he was a valuable asset in the way that the Monstars needed a big face in Space Jam. It, like, MLS have got him for almost their own reasons. They need him to be his Pelé, their Pelé. They need him to be their David Beckham. They need him to be the next marketing push for, you know, every Generation Z or whatever it is, you know, Gen Z. They need something of a shot in the arm.
And it is interesting that despite the hype and the unveiling, I've had almost no analysis on where will Messi play for Inter Miami?
Yeah, that is a good question. Do you have any feelings? Because at the moment, Inter Miami not having a fantastic time in the league. I think they've lost something like 11 on the spin just the night before they unveiled him. They didn't have a great result there either.
I mean, I don't have any opinion. And I think that in of itself is sort of an opinion because it demonstrates that this is not really about the football. I mean, Messi's own words were, he's completed football, or he's nothing else left to achieve. Gareth Bale was vocal about the fact that, in fact, it doesn't matter if you lose as much in the MLS. This feels more like, as you've said, a multimedia deal where Messi will happen to play football. And, you know, candidly, if he floats through the MLS without making any major impact, that will be viewed as a secondary problem.
Hmm. What would the first problem be?
I think the move's success will be judged on the impact on the league, on the brands, his and the MLS's. If Messi is bang average in the MLS, but, you know, absolutely gives the league the shot in the arm it's looking for, that move will be viewed as an absolute success for Messi.
Mm. I see what you're saying. And by proxy, therefore, MLS.
Right. I mean, Messi is, by all accounts, the cool guy in the year above, going to the house party where he has nothing to prove.
Right.
It doesn't matter if he doesn't talk to anyone all night. The only relevant detail really is
that he's there.
Did he turn up?
Right.
Did everyone get to talk about the fact he turned up?
Right.
Did he pose for a photo? And is everyone on Monday morning talking about his appearance at the party?
But he does, like, yeah, like, that's the point, is it, there does need to be a bit of chat about the party appearance, right? There needs to be a little bit of this kind of, you know, like, hey, do you remember when he said, let's all do shots kind of thing? Like, there needs to be some form of memorable moment in there. Otherwise, him being there, it almost feels, like you said, like, well, was the sixth former really at your birthday party?
You know, I think he just needs one or two moments.
Yeah.
I mean, if Messi played an hour a game or 45 minutes a game and looked awesome in a quiet way, I think that would be enough.
Yeah.
I don't know that you buy Messi age 37 because you're desperate for the most effective footballer in the world. You're buying him primarily because of the brand. And one of the reasons this deal is interesting is Messi's obviously made the decision that his continued brand building in America is more important than his continued brand building in Saudi Arabia.
Which is fascinating, actually, if you think about it, because I think he's also then looking at the holistic aspects of building a brand. Because, you know, it's also geography of where you want to build the brand. I think he's slightly had his fingers burned through the PSG and Saudi Arabia experience of, that's all very politicized. That's something that's quite a lot above my head. They're not really people who maybe prioritize me as an asset. And therefore, am I really best off over there?
There also might be an element here of the fact that he won the World Cup in Qatar. He has a deal with Saudi Arabia already. I mean, if you were Messi, and this is the scale we're talking about, you're looking at the world map and asking, well, where is there the biggest impact for me to improve my brand? You probably would look at North America.
Right. But and also in terms of, there's also a lot of Hispanic content there as well. There's a lot of people, like, all of Messi's games will obviously, I think, in the way that many MLS games will go out in both Spanish and English. There will be extra cameras at those games. There will be extra build-up to those games. There will also be extra analysis of those games. There will be cameras specifically focusing on Lionel Messi as part of these games. Like, even me myself, I don't know about you, but I am considering getting an MLS season pass to watch Lionel Messi?
Yeah, it's a fascinating question. How will he adapt to the level, or rather, how will the level interface with him?
Right.
You know, it's not a mistake he's in Miami. It's a Spanish-speaking place as a secondary language. Mm-hmm. In a way that, you know, Rhode Island certainly isn't, if you go up the coast.
Sure.
And one of the appeals probably is he's nearer home.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of it, right? Like, if you're out in the Middle East, to fly back to South America in general, but to fly back to Argentina is an even bigger journey, right? Like, you know, I'm looking literally on the Apple TV app here, and it's got season pass, but like, the idea of Messi being readily available in this area, like the idea of Messi being like, I don't know, it's kind of weird. Like, I don't feel like I've seen Ronaldo all that much out in Saudi Arabia. I don't feel like I've seen him being accessible. What they're trying to do with this MLS thing is like, Messi embraces America. He's like, even the way he was introduced there was like, he's our number 10. He's America's number 10 now, you know?
I don't think it's a mistake either that he's gone somewhere where he's had the relatively minimum impact so far. Sure. I mean, continentally, the US is, Antarctica aside, the continent on which he's had the least impact. Europe, South America, Africa are all, goes without saying.
In the Middle East, he's already quite a big star anyway.
He's already got the contract with the Saudi government. He's already won the World Cup in Qatar.
Right.
If we're trying to answer the question...
Hold on a minute, son. What's the stamp in your passport? Why are y'all going over Saudi?
Jesus, I'd love that.
He's not happening, sure.
So
by the way, Wednesday, Arsenal play MLS All-Stars. Thursday morning, actually, but Wednesday.
Yeah, so Messi won't be available for that one.
But that was what annoys me. Yeah, he should be.
I mean, he's also fit, right? He just played for Argentina against Australia.
He looks in great shape, actually. He looks very Messi-shaped right now, which is good for him. You know, obviously, when you get towards a certain point in your career, it's difficult to keep that level. By the way, three slides in a row on the Apple app are Messi. So the first one is, I'll just go here, look. First one, Messi. Second one, Messi. Third one, Messi. Same picture. Fourth one, Messi. Fifth one, not Messi. But mainly Arsenal then. So fascinating.
There is kind of the fascination, by the way, of seeing a player who's just won a World Cup in a league that it can be said, without being disrespectful, is far inferior.
Right. So this is another chat that I want to have about the inferiority of it in a second, because I want to preserve some of this for just a moment. Keep with me down this media route. So Messi retains the control over his own image rights. Obviously, he then owns those. He sold those off to MLS for a huge amount of money in the first place. There's an interesting aspect over the fact that he also gets shares from the Apple TV deal, which is obviously hugely lucrative, Adidas, which is obviously hugely lucrative, and also Fanatics, which is obviously hugely lucrative. Or two of those are merchandising propositions, and I guess Adidas may be beyond that as well, where it's like, if you've just got shares in Adidas, you're good, you know, because more, if you, you know, weirdly, I think the third or second best selling jersey in the States, no matter the jersey, still had Messi's name on the back. So you could buy an America jersey with Messi on the back. You could buy a Cincinnati atop the league at the moment, a Cincy jersey with Messi on the back. Like, historically, that's kind of not really the way that football works, if that makes sense. Like, that no one's buying a New York NYCFC jersey with Steven Gerrard on the back. Well, maybe they are, but not at mass.
No, I mean, I think the thing that the Americans, traditionally as sports fans, have been very good at is the idealization of individuals. And the sports themselves lend themselves to that.
Right.
Basketball is a much more individualistic sport than football. American football is the same with quarterbacks. Baseball is certainly the same with pitchers and hitters. And the way that American sports fans so often engage with their sports and their favorite players is now going to be applied to probably the greatest soccer player of all time.
Yeah, I get that. So on top of that then, not only that, but you'd imagine there's going to be a whole load of media sold around Lionel Messi in the first place. Obviously, the Apple TV deal is a really fascinating one. They've like integrated the MLS app as a platform thing. Once you're on that platform, it's very difficult to then kind of, you know, you'd imagine this long-term deal between Apple and MLS is obviously very lucrative from both, but you know, like it's kind of an easy in for even someone like me to consume it on a very like top line level, should we say? That's quite interesting for me in the first place. I'm like, you know, am I getting into a league in this? Like, am I the annoying LeBron James fan? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it is interesting, right? Because when you're spending so much money on an individual, one of the key questions we're asking is, how easy are we making it for a casual fan of this division to spend money with us? Right. How many barriers are we removing?
And also, is the goal similar to when David Beckham was there? Because obviously America, MLS in general have kind of dropped off the map, but is the goal to make as much money in this gold run, or is it to retain as many fans as possible in the long run? Do you know what I mean?
It's a fascinating question. I'd say the goals are compatible. You know, they sound like they're bumping heads, but really the same thing, generating interest, making a better product.
The exercise is slightly different though. You know what I mean? Like if you're heroing Messi, you just get Messi as far and wide as you can, which probably widens the footprint of the league in the first place. But the problem being, if the conversation is only around Messi, not really that much around MLS, the quality of MLS. And like you said, like when your first comment on MLS was really about the quality. Now, I'm not saying you don't know, but I don't think I have a good gauge on what quality MLS is. I don't think, and I'm also don't know if I have a good gauge on if the whole league is that quality, then surely as a product, like there's a equanimity,
equity,
but also I guess like the over, there's a siren in the background, but overall the equity in the league therefore makes it more watchable. Messi is far and away the best player in the league.
No, I mean, you ask a great question. Is it that their approach needs to be, hey, we have a really equitable league. This is really even compared to the European leagues. Messi is your way in, but our emphasis is on the division. Or is the question, it's Messi. And I'd say, like, you look at any, like, marketing funnel. Top of the funnel, you got the big shiny engagement thing. That might be Leo. But then as soon as you're in, Messi is your ticket in. Maybe they hit you with Monday Night Football style content. Maybe there's a huge push for the individual clubs. Maybe the narrative around the league itself is better developed, such that in 3 years' time when Messi's not there anymore, they've created a whole generation of fans who stick around.
Feeling off the back of that then, I remember the Kobe Bryant final year in the league in NBA. I remember, I think, Dwayne Wade's final year in the league. I remember every season on off the last couple of seasons, people have been saying, is this my last chance to see LeBron James? Obviously, he'll announce he wants the big send-off. But my point is more like this, from this moment already feels like a goodbye tour for Lionel Messi, weirdly. Like, I get it. Maybe initially there will be some form of like, hey, it's great to have you in the league. And there'll be a very high quality moment from Messi. He's clearly not in such a physical decline that he's like, you know, never going to play a game again. He played couple of months ago in a relatively good European league and played in the Champions League and has been training at the very top level, right? But it is acknowledged that generally he could have stayed in Europe and he didn't.
It's interesting with Messi because there's no reason why he's like 36 now.
Yeah.
That he couldn't play till 42 in defensive midfield, you know, being a Busquets or being a Pirlo.
Yeah.
There's no doubt in my mind about that. Yeah. Like, I mean, Pirlo had significantly worse physical attributes than Messi.
So did Higuain.
So did Higuain. I mean, but Higuain had to play up front. I mean, you could happily, in a league like MLS, get 220-somethings to do his running and just have him run things from defensive midfield.
So you're just saying, what about then as part of that like box midfield that we all know and love?
Possibly.
And then you've got someone alongside him who mirrors what he does, similar to Alexis McAllister in the Argentina setup. And then you've got two guys behind him who, you know, can just run things relatively. We know Messi has quite a specific need tactically, which is what we can get onto now, right? To have the team not built around him, but cognizant of his needs.
Look, Dwight York played in the World Cup for Trinidad and Tobago in defensive midfield, age like 43. They made that decision because they thought he's high enough quality.
That's the kind of football I'm here for.
Right.
That's exactly my kind of football.
The point I'm trying to make is Messi, if Busquets without moving.
Busquets is there, by the way. So Busquets has also joined him. Yeah.
And Jordi Alba possibly to follow.
Right.
Getting the old gang back together.
I wouldn't be surprised if like they got, I mean, it would be interesting to see if they could have got someone even bigger than that. But Messi is the biggest, I guess. They need a striker, really. I mean, they need a whole spine. That team sucks.
Barcelona side.
No.
Or the Inter Miami side.
Side. By the way, Inter Miami, not a good name.
I mean, was Matuidi not there for a while? Matuidi still is there.
Matuidi Sam Matuidi was like a good quality player as well, who went there during a time when he was better quality than to accept a deal like that, right?
I mean, Matuidi, my favorite thing about him is that he won the World Cup playing on the left wing in that France 2018 side.
Yeah, it was a very like adaptable France side. People forget Paul Pogba in that team. He was fantastic in that side. Paul Pogba was like, MVP, as they'd say.
Right, yeah. And I mean, we're going off track here, but it does show how international football works differently. The idea is just don't make mistakes.
Okay.
In the context of Messi, though, to answer a question about the farewell tour, possibly, but it actually wouldn't surprise me to see him pitch back up in Europe in a few years.
Messi,
in some kind of, again, brand-building capacity, where there was some kind of on-the-field role, only because if he's interested, I don't doubt for a second he could do it. I don't think that up front, by the way, or on the wing, or at 10.
Got to be deep.
He's a brilliant footballing mind, brilliant feet, all the things that you don't lose.
Is the worry maybe similar to, this is where the first time in the podcast, actually, we're going to mention the name Cristiano Ronaldo comes up. Is the worry that if he comes back to Europe, he's had a couple of years away, sure, he's still at very top level playing for Argentina. He's still at a very decent level in MLS. It's not like it's awful. It's not exactly, it's not top five league. Is the worry that if he then asks the team to be built around him, he can diminish her legacy by coming back, build as one of the greats, and take away from what he left?
It's such a good point. Yeah, is the short answer. And I think if he was to ever come back, it would have to be in this like slightly like guru, off the bench, kind of wise old figure kind of way.
In an almost like, sweeper?
Yeah, right. Thank you. It's like if Ronaldo had gone to Sporting Lisbon and decided, like, guys, I'm not going to play much, but I'm going to be an influence in the dressing room.
I'm going to stand on the sideline and look like a coach with the coach, like he did with Portugal at the World Cup.
Exactly. And as if he were to come on for 10 minutes at the end of a game, if they were chasing something, kind of a ringer.
Right. And so many people would have to gravitate towards him because he'd be such an unknown quantity in that capacity. Right.
So I like this. I don't know whether, I assume he wouldn't be interested in that role at all, Messi. But it would be a very cool role at Barcelona, by the way, age 42.
It just seems so different. I get what you're saying. The Barcelona thing, I can see possibly a final return there. Depends on the state of the club at that point, the financial incline, like the recovery they could make. I guess the aspect for me is it seems like two completely different deals that Ronaldo and Messi have made with different devils, right? The devil of MLS and Apple and all those things, which is, This is as far as I can see, it's not the first deal that's like this, but he's essentially Leonardo DiCaprio for this. He is, Daniel Craig.
It's multifaceted, like you couldn't believe.
Yeah.
Football deals don't look like that.
He's Batman. This is essentially making like a Marvel universe. This is one of the first Marvel universes, like strong Marvel universes.
Yeah. Exactly, and he's basically been brought in as the superhero. And they've said, we'll have half of DC Comics.
Because Robert Downey Jr. probably does have shares in how well Iron Man does. And, all the Batman, I think, get a share of the merchandise deals and those kind of things. Probably rightly so.
But the interesting thing is that so much of the deal that's been discussed in the press has been about the marketing, the branding, the economics.
Right.
And I can't remember, even with Ronaldo, just a year ago, a deal that had the equivalent flavor, or it's been so much about personal brand, so much about marketing impact. I'm not knocking it. It's just, I've never seen it before.
Mm. And I guess it's also hard to see. I mean, it definitely sets a sort of precedent within the league, right? Or within leagues globally. Like Mbappe kind of had a similar deal. He became the face of PSG. But the problem is he's then gone, I don't want to be Batman, or I don't want to be James Bond anymore.
The other problem with Mbappe there is he was always a temporary Batman.
Not all temporary?
Yeah, they are all temporary, but the difference is Messi's is temporary by necessity. He's old. Whereas Mbappe was signing in as Mr. PSG, but also I'm going to Real Madrid in 3 years.
And not only that, but you're meant to love it when you have it. Like when you have that, some people say owning a club is a really big honor. Right, like you're a custodian. Being the player also pretty high up in terms of like being the guy is so important.
But it's weird to have that be a financial economic state of affairs at a big club. Like PSG are a big club. And for you to be like part owner or pick the manager or something feels like a very strange...
It sets you up as the franchise quarterback.
Yeah, and it feels offensive to have there be a franchise quarterback.
To the legacy of the team, right?
So I mean, look, if you're into Miami or Kante with a signing on fee in Saudi Arabia bought a French team.
So true.
And that's fine because they're small teams.
Kante bought a French team, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Kante owns a French team in the fourth division.
What?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just purely from that deal?
I think he used a signing on fee.
Wow. Okay, so and then I guess the deal is what?
I don't know the details. He just owns a French team.
Wow.
I know, which sounds kind of ridiculous.
But go on.
But I guess the point I'm trying to make is that it's okay. That works for me. Messi having that deal into Miami or Beckham works for me. With Mbappe at PSG, it just feels like almost disrespectful to the institution of Paris Saint-Germain to have a current player have such a big role.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So
if Steven Gerrard got to pick the manager, that would feel weird to Liverpool. It would be some strange acknowledgement of the relative size of the club to the player.
And then beyond that as well, that yeah, like that shows the betrays the overall relations between club and player, right? Which is kind of weird in the first place. I get what you're saying.
Kante probably is bigger than that side. Messi is bigger than Inter Miami. Mbappe is not bigger than PSG. Really.
Right.
And I guess what I'm speaking about is how it feels somehow disrespectful, but nonetheless okay in the Messi example. It's because Inter Miami, and I think it's an interesting project. I think Beckham's done well with it. It's a little bit tacky.
Right.
But PSG, as much as they've sort of shat the bed in the last 10 years, they are definitely an institution. You know, they've been going... Yeah, they've been going... I mean, only since, I think, as recently as the 60s. But, you know, they had Ronaldinho and Pochettino, and they've got a fan base and the biggest club in Paris.
Yeah.
Feels very distinct from Inter Miami.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I totally understand what you're saying now. It's the feeling of the whole thing. This thing has now been built around Messi. I'm wondering if MLS are almost too deep in with Messi now. Like, it's great for Messi. And I think to an extent, like what we're not giving credit, because America is seen as such an entity.
Mm.
I'm trying to pick apart. So weirdly, like when we talk about Saudi, and obviously it's a government-owned league, we think of those two as the same entity, probably because they are very similar, intertwined people, right?
Sure.
Similar in MLS in the States, where it's like, why those two are quite intertwined? Apple is a massive American company. Why aren't we speaking in similar terms, almost? Like, this is a bit of a marketing exercise for America. This is a bit of a... You know, why aren't we speaking, America is lucky to have Messi, you know?
Well, I mean, the obvious answer, and it's not a very interesting one, is because they're a private company, whereas PIF
is not an investment fund. Yeah.
But you are right. Like, PIF is as much Saudi as essentially, at least metaphorically, Apple is America.
They also do have their own... I mean, America also have so many sporting stars that are already global faces. Like, they've, you know, got quarterbacks and, you know, basketball players and MLB players.
Exactly.
And, right. Whereas Saudi doesn't... I can't name anyone. But is that just my... I'm guessing, again, I think this is partially my westernization. My, like...
It is and it isn't. Because how many followers does the most... 2 years ago, the most famous Saudi sports person have? And
the one that's not Ronaldo or someone who's moved.
Saudi national, sorry.
Sure.
You know, it's some fraction of Kobe Bryant.
Oh, sure. I mean, Kobe Bryant's a poor example now, but back in the day, yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
I mean, the one interesting thing though too is actually America, so you basically have Jordan, Bryant.
LeBron James.
Tom Brady.
And then probably some other old school
exactly
guys.
But those are the only, you probably don't, I mean, you definitely don't have 10, right?
You've got 10 American stars you can name, for sure.
Sorry,
10.
You could name, absolutely, but not global penetrating stars.
Michael Jordan was probably the first. I think Michael Jordan on that scale was the first. It happened in correspondence with Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson also became musically, you know, insanely big at that point. I think America marketing-wise was just absolutely huge. Everyone wanted to be involved with that. Globally, they kind of wanted to stick their globalization tentacles as far as they could go at that time as well.
It's a great point, but I'm just looking up here how many Instagram followers Tom Brady has. And it's going to be the same as like Insignia, you know?
Yeah,
he's got 14 million, which is less than the Aston Villa women's player.
What?
Layman, she's...
How many has she got?
She's got more than Federer.
I'm now thinking most famous American sports stars.
I think as soon as you look beyond the basketball trio, you end up with no one who can come close to Messi, which is why I think it's been such an interesting exercise for them. Yeah. And why David Beckham was equally so appealing. Because, you know, America are very proud of their quite brilliant sports.
Serena Williams. But you wouldn't go America.
No, somehow not in the same way.
Weirdly, probably because of the racism in America.
That's right.
And therefore, like her... Yeah, but then the same with LeBron James. I guess like she's been more politically active, those kind of things. But she has, and also in tennis, you can be American, but you're not, if that makes sense. Like you're more your own entity. I get what you're saying.
Yeah,
it's really just Jordan, Muhammad Ali, but then his at odds nature with the American way. Mike Tyson, but Mike Tyson then again, maybe being at odds with a lot of what goes on in America, possibly doesn't represent in that same way. But maybe the weird thing is like he doesn't represent what mainstream marketing America wants people to believe or see, but he does represent a lot of what is, I'd imagine what a lot of people would feel is pure about the American idea of people. Does that make sense? Like he's gone over there. He's, I think he's now Muslim. He's still very famous amongst, you know, white Trump voting Americans. Andre Agassi was big. But, and Michael Phelps.
Yes,
we're kind of getting off what we're going.
But, yeah, but I guess the point.
Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Tiger Woods.
There you go.
And there was a name on the tip of my tongue, and it was Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods.
Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah, see, these are good examples. But the point remains, Marcus Rashford has more followers than Tom Brady. Marcus Rashford can't get a game for England on the left-hand side.
Nor can Tom Brady.
But that, I think, explains such the exaggerated appeal of Messi for the Americans.
Yeah.
You know, like England, when we bring in Erling Haaland, we think, oh, it's awesome for the Premier League. We don't think game changer. We now have a star that can penetrate Africa, Asia, South America.
So this is partly what I was trying to get at, right? I think we should discuss this in the final section of the podcast where we basically break down how does it actually work? Why did Messi choose to go there? What's the mechanics of a deal like this? And why is it that cultural, like, you know, when we speak about, I'll break this down, give me a second. Why is it that when we break these things down, we talk about the economics of it, we talk about all these things, and we make them sound fairly objective, but actually like in football and even in the deal itself, there's a lot of subjective things which have had a huge weight on this. Messi's like long-term marketability, not only in South America, but also in Europe, like MLS wants to be big in Europe. You know, the fact that Apple and Adidas and whoever else think they can probably leverage his face globally enough to make enough money for 60 million, 50 million a year. That's almost 200 million for him to be paid. That doesn't sound like a lot of money to me compared to what he was offered elsewhere. So I'm saying like, there's got to be a breakdown of things here. Like surely the MLS franchise is going to go up in value for him. Do you know what I mean? There's going to be a lot of, there must be hidden value, I guess is what I'm saying in this whole thing.
Yeah, so it sounds like there's two questions. One is, how much was the deal worth to him financially compared to the others? And the second is, well, what's the extra value not included in there?
Right, okay.
On that first question, who knows? You'd imagine he can't do better than the Saudi offer financially in the short term. But the abstract value or the soon-to-be-realized value is probably the brand. The value to Messi in expanding his brand in America on the margin,
huge,
given how unexploited that market is for him relative to what it could be, probably is the difference between the two offers.
And probably the same. If he's got direct attachment to Adidas or whatever it is, if Adidas grow in that market, which they likely will because of him, his profit grows, he wins.
Yeah.
So that's quite abstract though.
It is a little. I mean, the other thing to say is like, well, what's the marginal value of 100 million for Messi? And probably less than being their home for 3 years. And I don't know, right? Like you'd have to ask him, but my suspicion is they're comparable financially.
Right.
But you know, he won't play football for more than, let's just be very clear, 5 years, right? At the top end. So he essentially has 5 years where he can expand his brand more effectively than any year afterwards. And if that's the question he's answering, I mean, probably America makes sense, I want to say.
It does. And I guess also on top of that, like, America's probably the place where you're going to get the most media deals.
Right.
Like, you're going to get the most marketing stuff.
He'll go on Jimmy Kimmel.
I think he can speak English. I'll be fascinated.
I've never heard him. I've never heard him really speak English.
Sometimes he says like some stuff.
Calling Milner a donkey in Spanish.
And stuff like that, which I imagine Milner loves.
I loved Robertson, by the way.
Yeah.
Just stroking his hair. Robertson is like king shithouse.
Yeah, Robertson in that capacity is like everything Liverpool need. The situational stuff elsewhere is the problem. So with that then, he will get other marketing deals in the States in Spanish. He will grow their, I guess, overall brand. But then on top of that as well, he will also grow brand Messi at the same time. Like, brand Messi will become bigger because of this. He'll be pictured at the courtside in Miami. He'll be pictured when he goes to play, you know, LAFC and the Galaxy, like courtside at the Lakers, those kind of things.
If you were to argue that it was a bad move for Lionel Messi, how would you do it?
You do it by saying you had a little longer in the league, in the top five leagues in Europe. You could have done a 1 year deal in the Premier League. You could have done a, you know, City would
imagine
have.
Imagine him at City. Mate. City would have been
taken
amazing.
Him. I think at this point, City probably would have taken him.
It would have been
Look
amazing.
At the people they're losing this season. Pep would probably savor a challenge like this. There's going to be loads of people who want to see him. Like, you know, there are a few teams who could accommodate him to the degree that you need to. But Pep is probably one of those managers that could.
Where would he play for City?
In one of those two floating eights or tens.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably a 10. He'd be a 10. He'd be classed as a 10. Everyone would call
me. You know, part of me, now you've said this, is quite sad, or very sad, that Messi's never played in the Premier League.
It's sad, I think, that he wasted, and you know, obviously, huge amount of enjoyment in Ligue 1 for fans. It's sad that he wasted that much time with PSG, if that makes sense. He could have possibly even been a bit part player in this City team and done something.
Oh, man, and the reunion with Pep. I mean, also, like, he's got nothing to prove, at least not against English teams. Right. He's got an amazing record against. But wouldn't it have been cool to see him at Goodison Park?
That's part of it, I think. Yeah, that's the other aspect. And then I guess the other one is like, you know, not only are you going there, maybe you could have gone to Naples, or you could have gone, you know, followed in Maradona's footsteps.
So speaking of Maradona and Argentina, maybe, you know, Tevez said, I never spoke English because of the Falklands. That was his thing. Do you reckon growing up in South America and Argentina, there was maybe some anti-English sentiment?
I think so.
That might have made him think, I don't feel like giving a year of myself to England.
I also just feel like maybe you don't realize how daunting it is to go to another country, especially with Messi. I've heard Messi's very specific in the manner with which he likes to live his life. So he's got quite a lot of needs. He's quite prescriptive in how he wants to be homed, housed, treated day to day, those kind of things.
Do you remember Nolito?
Yeah.
Do you remember he left City after about 3 months because his wife was turning yellow in the winter?
Really?
That was what she said.
There was someone else as well. Was it Navas, Jesus Navas, who just, he hated leaving Spain.
I can imagine, to be totally candid with you, that Messi might think, well, Salford's great, but Miami's nicer.
So Messi has his needs. I think he has his needs to have people around him. You know, Barcelona, I think in the time when Messi was there, was a very like family-oriented club. The players all knew each other. The players all kind of hung out together. I think there are a couple, like Neymar kind of struggled to penetrate that group of players at one point. I think in Paris, he struggled even more.
God, Paris, now you said, Paris was such a shit decision.
Paris was such a shit decision, not because necessarily of PSG itself, but because of the entities that owned and operated PSG. So Paris in itself is an incredible city. I think, weirdly, like I just think they've messed up the Paris marketing consistently, right?
Yeah, and it's also just such a forgettable year.
Yeah.
Going to PSG is like, oh, well done, you won the league, you got knocked out the Champions League. No one worked out how to press with Mbappe, Neymar and Messi. You beefed a bit with Mbappe, you made some headlines, you went home.
You also wasted a series of good managers. Like you had Pochettino in that time, which, you know,
oh my
historically,
God, of course you did.
Apparently Messi and Neymar both had issues with, or something
Thomas
along
Tuchel.
Those lines. Dude, like we're talking about top tier European managers here.
Carlo?
Maybe the end of, I can't remember.
It's so funny with Carlo Ancelotti, like PSG probably did, but you're asking me, you know?
It's also like, isn't it bizarre that we can't remember the crossover of Lionel Messi with managers? Like, I'm pretty sure I could tell you, you know, all the managers that Marcus Rashford has had while he's been at United, I'm pretty sure I could tell you all the past Real Madrid managers of recent years, we should be remembering PSG in that sense. And Messi, they went the wrong way around, right?
I like that way of putting it. One question that we were talking about yesterday is the following. Yeah, so Ancelotti was at PSG, just because by osmosis. Barcelona 2011, yeah. Rock up at Wembley Stadium to play Man United off the park. How many Lawrence McKennas, so clones of Lawrence McKenna, need to be on that pitch to beat Barcelona that day? 11. Yeah. Do you reckon? See, because the answer that we got was 50.
You specifically asked the question, how many Lawrence McKennas need to be on the field?
We didn't ask Lawrence McKenna particularly.
Right.
We used the
proxy of people.
The proxy of the speaker we were talking to. I think 50 was too few, was my view.
They were a great side. I feel like also Pep would find a way through.
25 centre-halves? Too many cooks in the kitchen?
Probably. Depends on, I mean, are they all... Can I build myself in different ways? Like, can I have a muscular version of me and a...
Oh, that's interesting. You can have like the Rob McElhenney version where he gets really lean.
Correct.
But yeah. Then the... Yeah, so you have a year to sculpt different...
versions of myself. Some of them more cardio-based, some of them more muscular, some of them, you know, I'll train them more tactically in that time. I'm quite tactically adept, I feel.
So I need a number.
11.
Good answer.
Yeah.
11 was the last number I was expecting.
Imagine I went like 7.
Yeah, well, you know what I
mean? I could
beat
them with my hands down.
I could beat them with one in midfield.
Yeah.
Which is essentially what Alex Ferguson tried in Rome 2 years prior. But well, that's a conversation for another day.
Annoyingly, Sir Alex could have beaten them one of those two times. Didn't. And I think he outpsyched himself. We don't talk about that enough.
Well, I mean, he basically admitted it, right? He said...
Yeah, maybe because he admitted it.
He's worthless.
Pep doesn't admit things until it's too late. So the conversation's already happened. He hasn't owned it.
You know, it is interesting. Like Ferguson lived and died by the sword. He was very pragmatic, but also at times very ideological. And then that ideology made him say, no, we're going to try and outpass Barcelona. In 2011, no matter what they did, they would have got beaten.
Right.
2009, though, that was an opportunity.
There was, you're right. And they were a great side in 2009. And they should have won that in 2009. I actually think Ronaldo, late on, doing all the mental things he did. Ronaldo is excellent, has been a fantastic Manchester United player, but there's too many times I think he gets held up in like too high a regard for what he did or what he is doing. And there were some decisions he made in that final where I'm like, you know what? Maybe if you hadn't built around that guy in certain attacking positions...
Do you mean like the 40-yard shots?
Yes, the 40-yard shots almost specifically. There are times where I think to myself, people go, oh, well, it's a shot. I'm like, the real thing you should be saying there is that's a piece of build-up play that you've just ruined.
Yeah, but you know, totally agree. I've had the same thought, but he did it against Porto and it goes top corner.
Yeah, but that's very unlikely.
Yeah, no, I mean, the XG would be
low.
0.0.
Yeah.
0.5.
For good reason. For good reason. Anyway, fucked it. Away from that, though, I am interested in, I guess, the pull factor of Messi. Busquets has now gone there. I think he's probably anticipating deals alongside Messi, probably similarly with other people. It's like, hey, well, if Messi's going to be pictured, I could probably get a bit of the cash that's fallen off the table here, because there probably will be some cash that's fallen off the table, you know? Like, oh, Messi can't do that deal, but hey, Sergio.
Right, and Sergio becomes a bigger brand.
By proxy of Messi.
Yeah, God, he's a good footballer.
I'm surprised. What was that goalkeeper that was at Barcelona years ago?
Pinto.
Pinto isn't in on this deal.
I've not thought about Pinto for about a decade. How old is he? 43.
His name's not Pedro Pinto. That is a journalist.
I'm guessing 43 years old and a youth coach at Barcelona. That's my official guess.
And he used to have cornrows. Jose Pinto. Sorry, I just had to look him up. Jose Pinto. Jose Manuel Pinto.
How old is he?
He's
43.
47.
No.
Yeah. He was a really very striking looking guy. Not a good goalkeeper.
Where's Claudio Bravo? What's Claudio Bravo up to? He sounds like quite into Miami bait.
He's definitely bait for into Miami. Where
South
is he?
American.
I'm just looking, by the way, now. Personal life, career statistics, honors. He won the Intertoto Cup. Where is Pedro now? 11th and agreed December 37 renewed his contract. Nope. Can't find it. Personal life. Nope. Yet. Excuse me. In 2000, he found his own, he founded his own label, which was also the name of his first release 6 years later. His musical alter ego, Wahin.
His musical alter ego?
Yep. Pinto had a musical alter ego.
That doesn't surprise me hugely.
And Pinto started working as a musician and record producer, mainly in the genre hip-hop.
Of course, you can't be a footballer without a slightly cringe side career in hip-hop. I mean, one thing that used to be quite a regular Google search was Jan Sommer, because I one day just found myself on his personal website. And we won't do this exactly now, but it's one of the funniest reads ever. It has sentences like, Jan Sommer's quick reflexes help both for business and football.
There's a similar goalkeeper in the Premier League or in one of the lower leagues that's like this as well. I think I read it out once and I felt bad afterwards on a live show. Claudio Bravo, Raul Batiste.
I know, I was just saying.
2020, till now.
Unbelievably high level for him.
Do you think that's unbelievable for a goalkeeper? I feel like at 40 years old, like that's perfectly normal.
I don't think
he
was very good.
Really?
Well, not at City, at least.
Yeah, but that was because at City he didn't get Pep Guardiola at City, so he kind of got hung out to dry a little bit because Pep got annoyed with him. He like there was some sort of personal issue there. Almost
he conceded 11 shots on target in a row or something.
That's City's fault.
No, I mean, to be fair, coming in for that first year, what an interesting experiment, by the way. Like bringing in, binning off Joe Hart and bringing in Claudio Bravo and playing a system that. Football in England. I mean, it's fascinating, right? You look back to 2015 when Guardiola joined and no one played that football in the Premier League. Truly.
At all.
No, truly.
Yeah.
The other shout out goes to Conte, who in the course of his first season with Chelsea was 3-0 down at the Emirates at half time and thought, no more, and then didn't lose a game for 15 because they went 3 at the back. And again, it sounds interesting. No side has won the league with 3 at the back before.
Yeah, in that sense, Conte is very unique in his own fashion. I'd love to see Conte go to MLS. I do think that's part of it. You know, I was kind of thinking this the other day. We'll wrap up in a second, but I was thinking this the other day with the two managers that have gone to Saudi Arabia. So Steven Gerrard and the guy who used to manage Wolves.
Nuno Espirante Santos.
Is he there? Is he there now?
Oh, you don't mean him.
I think it's Nuno. I think Nuno's gone to Saudi, right?
He was there last year, I think. I think he won the league even.
She doesn't much know about Saudi Arabia. But what I'm saying is, it's fascinating that these two are having conversations with Fabinho, Henderson, all these guys. And essentially, those guys are interested in going and doing this.
As a Liverpool fan, if you could take 65 mil for the two of them, would you think, thank God
right,
for that?
So I'm going to make a video about this in the coming days. Broad thoughts. If you're Liverpool, as Liverpool, if you remove the morality of it, this is kind of the best way to move on your old dogs. Like, these guys have been stalwarts for the team. Fabinho, Henderson, both possibly some of the first names on the team sheet alongside Virgil van Dijk and Alisson, right?
And then you can pay for Alexis McAllister.
Yeah, you can pay for...
new lads.
You can pay for any of the new guys, basically in combination. If you get rid of two of the three elderly midfielders or sort of older midfielders in the side, yes, please.
If Brighton were buying Henderson, he'd go for tops 20 million.
Yeah, probably 10.
Right. I mean, Fabinho's probably at this point in his career more a better player than Henderson.
I think he's just because he's younger and also just because he probably plays a role. I think the thing
which requires running less.
A, requires running less. B, is actually quite hard to fill. So the problem that Liverpool have now is they're moving Fabinho on, who is very more than serviceable, I think, in his own position. He had a poor season last season, probably because of the tactical changes Liverpool made and also just because of his availability sometimes. Replacing him?
It's not obvious who that is.
Limited names that pop into your mind that play specifically that individual holding role. Even Caicedo, you know, going to Chelsea... He's not exactly the individual holder.
The pivot, really.
Exactly. So, but Fabinho predominantly has played in a single pivot for his whole career.
Wow.
Maybe arguably not because Henderson always dropped deep or whatever.
No, but Henderson was... I think that's a fair characterization.
I always think of a pivot meaning that I need to think of Henderson being parallel with Fabinho.
Which he's never been.
Which he doesn't... It's not that he's never been. It's he doesn't want to be. So the goal is not to get Henderson there. The goal is to get Henderson either high up the field or deep down the field, because then the formation is deep into like a complex piece of play, right?
Correct. But you're right. I mean, if you think about the names that are out there as a single pivot, it's very difficult to think about them. I mean, with 45 mil, I bet you'd find one.
So Lavia is one that's being thrown out there. Not exactly like the final product as a single pivot. Probably you're able to coach him, but it's going to need a little bit of handholding.
You know who this would be? And I'm being tongue-in-cheek for lots of reasons, but Calvin Phillips.
So Calvin Phillips would be a really interesting one. I think you'd struggle to get him away from City, especially at Liverpool, because City would probably see him as a bit of a finishing piece for Liverpool.
Yeah, well, that, I mean, the other thing is, like, if Rodri gets an injury,
they need the backup.
And the thing is,
also, their midfield is light this season. Their midfield's lost. Gundogan is losing Bernardo Silva. Kyle Walker's on the way. They're losing a lot of big guys. Mahrez probably on his way to the Middle East.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting because if you were Calvin Phillips, the truth is, if you can get yourself playing in tight spaces and you can avoid getting Guardiola'd, which is, you know, decimate the term. The origin is in the Roman army. They used to kill every 10th person if they lost a battle. That's essentially what Guardiola does with every five of his best players.
Right.
Cancelo, you've been brilliant, mate. Banished.
Yeah.
Raheem Sterling, most goals for me apart from Messi. See ya.
Goodbye.
Phil Foden, better than Messi, better than everyone not seen for 6 months.
Yeah. No time to die.
If you can avoid getting Guardiola'd, essentially. Laporte, best left centre half in the world. Oh, you wanted to play. I didn't realize that.
Right, okay. You know? Yeah, I thought you were just happy being part of the squad. I get what you're saying. And that's why I feel like they won't let him go.
Agreed.
Because Guardiola almost doesn't see him as one of those. In order to be Guardiola'd, you have to reach peak what Guardiola wanted you to be.
Correct. It's so true.
So Calvin Phillips hasn't done that. Guardiola could not let him go for that reason.
He needs to be really, really good and then get dropped for the FA Cup final, Edison.
Essentially, people went with, so say with Cancelo, they went, no way, he's playing him as an inside midfield, he's playing him as a part of a two at the base of midfield. Pep goes, yeah, you can have him, try it yourself.
Yeah, who's next, by the way? Is John Stones is being loaned out to Everton the last 6 months.
Yeah, he's going. John Stones will fall out with him in the next 18 months.
We'll finish it here, but like the John Stones thing, you know, is so utopian. You had this lad from Barnsley who had a mistake in him but could play. And he's now turning into a treble-winning England starting centre-half.
Probably captain of the team of the season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'd say the innovation in John Stones from Christmas onwards was the best bit about the season, as far as City were concerned.
For most people, I think. For most tacticians, it was probably was.
It's fucking cool.
So I guess that's kind of it, right? Is I think if Messi can take some of these tactics, if Messi can bring some of the European style and panache that he's had in the past to MLS, if he can bring some of that South American element, if he can bring some of the eyes, all these kind of aspects of the game, that's what I think MLS are looking for here. They're looking for European validation. Beckham bought star power. I think what Messi brings is a validation that, I mean, you know, LA Galaxy were kind of primed and ready for Beckham. I feel like Inter Miami are primed and ready in a different way. They're new, very little history. They need the brand to build. This is his New York cosmos of Pelé. This is him rubber stamping MLS again and giving it a re-up. What they need to do is capitalize on this. And the deal is fantastic, by the way. You know, I think the long-term ownership in the league is great. But I think it's definitely like the future of the sport where if you're a big enough player, I just can't see a Premier League player going, I want a shares in the team.
It's just such a foreign concept.
But it could happen if, say, so here's what I wanted to say, right? Let's do one last segment. Just give me 10 minutes. Give me a hot five. Hot five on this is that the Premier League is becoming more and more franchised. People want to buy a franchise in the Premier League now, right? Which essentially is what Inter Miami were. They were an expansion side in a franchised league, a closed league with no relegation and promotion. Correct?
Yeah, I mean, the term franchise in English football makes me feel a bit sick in the context.
But stick with that concept because I think it's quite an important one. I think it's one which will become more and more prevalent or kind of more important in the coming years. As players like Mbappe, as players like Messi, as players reach the peak of what their powers are and they get offered more and more lucrative deals where they're going to be asked to take a lot of money to be incredibly valuable assets. I think they begin to leverage some of those some of that value that they have, like say an Mbappe has with PSG, right? And you can kind of see that in the structure of that deal in the first place. But as it becomes harder and harder to choose which franchise is going to win the league next year, and therefore how to guarantee titles, they're going to need to give away more and more rather than just giving away the cash. So it's not just give me a share of the profits. It's going to be give me a share of X, Y, Z. Give me a share of the club. Give me something here that I can barter with.
It's a fascinating idea, and I accept it's going that way. I have to say, it makes me feel slightly physically sick.
In what way?
I don't know. I don't know if it's the Wimbledon Milton Keynes connection or whether it's the fact that like the idea of personal brands, right, starting to take over football clubs that are 150 years old.
I get you.
That feels like beyond dystopian. That to me in some ways feels worse than the Super League.
Yeah, and that's what I think is people are going to get a bit pissy about. Like I think players are going to, it may also kind of change the way that players interact with sides, but this is partly it, right? I think that's partly where these owners are going, is it's like we've already acknowledged these aren't ownership or property of the fans anymore broadly in a commercial sense. Its ownership is now image rights. It's, you know, it's the copyrights. It's all these kind of things. I think players are going to start to like trade in those things. And I think players are going to want more and more equity in that. Like if I'm Trent Alexander-Arnold in my next deal, I'm asking for shares.
I just hate it. It makes me feel like personal brands increase. I accept it's going to happen.
Maybe Trent's a good one actually, because Trent's a homegrown player. So he can be seen. By the way, it's also a great way of knowing that you can build your franchise around that player or build your team around that player.
And it like, assumes loyalty, right? Because they're incentivized to stick around.
Correct.
Look, Lawrence, I accept in full. I mean, it's a fascinating point and not one I've heard before. It's worse than the Super League in my view, because what it ends up doing is turning real life football clubs into this dystopian ultimate team.
Tradable assets.
Oh yeah, I mean, it makes it NFT-ish. It's like...
It's not quite that though, is it? Like, I get what you're saying, but...
I don't want a patchwork of overpaid, and I say overpaid not in a you should pay nurses more kind of way, but essentially overpaid. I don't want Mbappe and Ronaldinho and Pochettino owning 5%. Like,
yeah.
It feels like a total affront to what's so cool about football.
Would you not also want though, so if you just to explore the flip side of it, and I think this is one of the outcomes of it, right, is we want players to be more invested in our team. We want them to stick around. Is it not that the overall benefit and the, you know, like the direct, I guess, sorry, the direct, players don't see the uptick in a side's form until they renegotiate their contract. So it could be that you leave a side and you've never negotiated your contract up, right?
Sure.
I think big time players, especially, I mean, maybe Mbappe is like a bad example, but these one-off kind of players that only come around once in a generation, they're going to need something that brings them in. They're going to need something that makes them want to go to you.
Is it not enough to win the European Cup and be on £1 million a week?
I get the feeling that in the next generation, partly because of the media literacy, partly because of the business literacy of these guys, they're going to go, you know what? No, like I know how much money you're making.
Right.
That I'm not making a big enough, I'm 1/23rd of that, or I'm like whatever, which may also lead, and this is what I think is interesting, to a kind of not a rubber band effect, but like, you know, I don't have the vernacular maybe to express it, but like, owners trying to go the other way as well, where owners go, we don't want a shareholder. We want someone who's happy to accept the cash. We want someone who's happy to be an athlete. We want someone who buys into our ethos, but essentially buys into the fact that it's our ethos, not their ethos.
Yeah, and I think it's a great place to finish up with Messi again, because this deal being kind of the first of its kind, more or less, maybe does open the door for this. And my grumpiness around it aside, I think you make a fascinating point about... You may well end up with that being the kind of incentive that attracts one-off players.
Yeah, and I think you'll see that more at Real Madrid's and Barcelona's. And especially if it's like, I mean, you know, Barcelona in particular have financial trouble right now. Like,
right, so maybe one of their economic fucking assets, levers, is...
Buy into our assets. It makes some sense.
No, it makes total sense. I mean, the reason I'm so upset about it is because as an argument, it's very elegant.
Right.
It's a brilliant point, and I've not heard it articulated before. But my off-the-bat reaction is...
I get that.
And my grumpiness is reflective of my recognition that it's probably going to happen.
Right. And the fact that there was one point in the film industry, in Hollywood, in all these utopian places where everyone was like, oh, it's about the art, dude. Like, you know, we're all just making films here. Do you know what I mean? Like, let's essentially make plays, but on the stage, right? And then comes along franchising, then comes along Star Wars. We're in the Star Warsification of sport at the moment. We're in that era where it's like, cool, make another asset that we can franchise out.
I mean, look, economically, it makes brilliant sense. It's a fascinating idea. I wish I didn't hate it as much as I do. I guess I'm going to have to come to terms with it because it's such a brilliant point.
Either that, or I think there are going to be like, okay, but so here's the thing, right? And here's the exciting asset of that. I was trying to think where I take this. I know. Because the top assets are going to be so saturated with cash, City, Newcastle, neither of those guys need shareholders. They've both got their own missions, their own ideas of where they're going. Even Chelsea to a degree, Liverpool to a huge degree. I know they're looking for buyers, but if the next step for Liverpool is to be bought by someone who has so much cash, it's unimaginable where they go next. Manchester United, unimaginable levels of cash. Tottenham, their next buy will be unimaginable levels.
You're saying they don't need to attract players with anything but money because they've got so much of it to throw at them.
Correct. So the next level down will be the franchisable club. The next level down, I'm not even saying like, you know, Villa or Brentford. Maybe Brentford might be an interesting one. But like these clubs where they need to solidify their position.
Like
in
Inter Miami.
Right.
Okay.
Well, Inter Miami are kind of a bad example because MLS has got no relegation or people going up and down. But the point
is they're not a big club.
And the other aspect is you have shares in a club which you then want to stay in the league. So if you buy into Leicester City and you're a player, if you take shares and you're a big asset, of course you don't want them to go down. Because cashing out your shares and leaving the club is so much harder than keeping them in the league.
Yeah, just win away at Brentford.
Right.
Just do that.
The problem being, I can also see it going the other way, where it's like, look, I'm invested in something here. I don't see where it's going. Let it die. I'll walk away.
You know what would be a nice compromise position? I don't have a problem with players once retired being part of consortiums. Maybe it's like a post, you know, like a 2035 clause.
Like Messi's buy-in is sort of like his shares in the league. I can't really catch
it's the current player thing that fucks me off because it's like you don't get the incentives all wrong. I don't want Mbappe picking the sporting director. You know, I don't want him demanding, will I play on the
left? But he's already done that.
Exactly.
Right.
Lawrence, mate, you've opened my eyes here to a dystopian possibility. One of those conversations. You've done this very articulately.
I understand that.
I can only thank you and curse you in the same breath.
Utopia has a lot of those kind of people. Thanks a lot, Jamie Slevin, for joining us on this podcast.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
And we'll see you guys again in the next one. It's kind of a shame that revelation came so late. Maybe we couldn't have explored it anymore, but the franchising of sport is boring. No?
It's boring, but it's fascinating.
Yeah, we try and make it interesting on this podcast. Thanks a lot for listening. If you're interested in this kind of thing, then hit the subscribe button and we'll see you again here real soon. Give it a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else that you get your podcasts. It genuinely helps us climb the charts and just remain relevant. And we will see you guys in the next one. Thanks
a lot.
And
we appreciate it.
Oh, of course. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.